Gainesville and the University of Florida brace themselves for tonight's speech by white supremacist Richard Spencer. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, we'll go live over to Gainesville and hear how people there are reacting to Spencer's controversial speech on campus later today. The governor declared a state of emergency over there. Gators and others, what do you think about this? Get on the line right now, 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, JEA is planning a major expansion of the use of solar power. We'll hear what that might mean for the First Coast. Plus, a look at the Thrive program on the UNF campus. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, the University of Florida never asked for this kind of attention. Still, well-known, in fact, notorious white supremacist Richard Spencer has all eyes trained on Gainesville today as he prepares to appear on campus to make a speech and air his hateful views. At the request of local law enforcement, Governor Rick Scott has declared a state of emergency for Alachua County today so that he can better secure the area. Now, all of this has been a major headache for UF and the city of Gainesville, particularly after the riots, injuries, and the homicide that happened at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville after white supremacists rallied there to protest the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue. More unrest like that is the last thing Gainesville wants. So, how did UF get here? And what's it like over there right now? We begin the hour with a closer look at how the University of Florida is preparing to handle the Spencer appearance. To set the scene, we welcome Ryan Vasquez. He's multimedia news manager with WUFT, and he's on the line from Gainesville. Ryan, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Lots of calls already. What are your thoughts about white supremacist Richard Spencer speaking in Gainesville at UF? The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. And Ryan, of course, Governor Scott declared a state of emergency in Alachua County so as to prevent a repeat of what the University of Virginia saw in Charlottesville with the deadly Unite the Right rally, which so horrified the nation. This morning, can you describe the scene for us over there? What does a state of emergency look like in Alachua County and on the campus right now?
Well, state of emergency, to be clear, I know when people see that they think of all the things that might imply, especially related to hurricanes and other things. But the University of Florida kind of came out and they tried to clarify that what this was is a request from the Alachua County Sheriff's Office, the sheriff herself, Sadie Darnell, just requesting that the bureaucratic delays that usually come when working across jurisdictions be dropped during an event like this, and the National Guard is eligible to be called up. Outside of that, there was no necessarily elevated risk in anyone's view when this was declared. It was just a request made by the sheriff. But what that does mean is that there are roughly what we've heard, 25% of the Florida Highway Patrol's total Florida force is in Gainesville. They've been patrolling the university in groups, their quick response force. And we've seen quite a tick up in normal police, patrols and everything else, more so than you would even see on what we're used to home football games here in the University of Florida in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. So barricaded areas, closed off areas, streets getting closed off earlier in the day, barricaded areas downtown, places just walled off so they can't be demonstrated in, if you will.
The university president has urged students and residents to ignore Spencer's speech. Classes have not been canceled. Protests are expected, including members of the Antifa anti-fascist group. From what you're hearing, are students planning to ignore his speech and are employees of the campus staying away? What are you anticipating?
We've heard a mix. So, we are a large university of roughly 50,000. So to split them down the middle would still be a lot out there and a lot not doing things. So we've heard folks who are being encouraged to go out there and exercise their First Amendment right to protest. We've been also told that don't give them any attention. So various groups, even within certain communities, some will say don't go out there and pay them any mind, and others say go out there and protest as passionately as you can. So expectation-wise, we expect it to be pretty well attended, but also a large number of people in town will not be paying any attention to this as well.
And to be clear, Richard Spencer is a white supremacist who espouses hateful views. He has said he wants to preserve the white majority in this country. The Anti-Defamation League has branded him as a hateful and anti-Semitic speaker, one who espouses neo-Nazi-esque views. He has been condemned by a rash of groups. The University of Florida tried to initially prevent him from speaking, Ryan, isn't that right? But after Spencer's attorney raised a ruckus, he was eventually allowed to speak. And as you pointed out, this has sparked a furious debate over the First Amendment in this country and the limits of free speech in this country. I'm sure that has also generated some lively dialogue on campus about our First Amendment.
Absolutely. The hardest thing to determine is what is hate speech. And while some folks may say is hate speech, it's another man's rhetoric. And so in this particular instance, it has not been deemed hateful enough that he can be stopped for that that particular point. But if violence does occur and violence is incited, which we've talked to him a couple of times, Richard Spencer, I should say, and he says that's not his intent, what happens is what happens. But if that's the case, then it will be shut down. But as far as the First Amendment goes, we have the First Amendment Center here at the University of Florida, and we've talked to a number of our lawyers and professors here, and there's something called the heckler's veto, and you cannot stop someone from coming here just because they have a different view. So in that instance, he is allowed to come here and speak as long as he is not inciting violence, which is what I think many people deem the typical benchmark for hate speech.
All right, let's go to a few of your calls right now as Richard Spencer, the white supremacist, prepares to speak this afternoon at the University of Florida in Gainesville. We're speaking with Ryan Vasquez. He's the multimedia news manager at WUFT in Gainesville. What are your thoughts about this? 549-2937. Karen is over in Arlington right now. Hey, Karen, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's lovely to talk to you.
You too.
Yes, I have a daughter who's a student at the University of Florida. I'm also an alumnus myself. And today my daughter actually has an exam during the time Richard Spencer is speaking, and her teacher has decided not to cancel or move that exam. So she's going to have to be out and about on campus during this time, and we're a little worried about that. But we have discussed safety plan with her and you know, that she needs to get to where she's going several hours in advance and just stay in place as much as possible and, you know, working out alternate routes back to her apartment and things like that. But besides her safety, I think what really makes me angry as an alumnus is that the college is having to fork over $500,000 to do the safety for this, to pay for the security. That just seems ridiculous to me. In an age when so many kids could use scholarships.
Right.
We're having to do this.
Yeah, thanks for that, Karen. And Ryan, I have an email from Javon about that. As a taxpayer, I hate having to foot the bill for Spencer to speak at UF. What about that?
So, again, with the heckler's veto, we can only charge so much as a university. $10,000, I believe, or $10,400 is the amount for that particular space. So just because you don't like what he has to say, again, you know, many people agree, and I agree as well. I do not like what he has to say. As long as he's not inciting hateful speech, he has the right to say it. And the heckler's veto is you cannot charge one organization $2 million because they are a security risk and say charge a local touring production of Rent nothing because they don't have that same risk. The cost for the Phillips Center is the cost for the Phillips Center that does include security and other things. Outside of that, this is a task that is taken on by the university. And as the president has said, this is somewhat of a collateral damage of having a robust First Amendment.
And
unfortunately, that's the case. But
and do we know, Ryan, why Spencer targeted UF and Gainesville?
I would say he's targeting the University of Florida and other universities like it, like he has with Auburn. He's targeting Cincinnati, Ohio State. These are large universities used to having large football games on campus on Sunday. You cannot deny people from walking on campus. You cannot restrict access. They're big, large public universities, and he knows that the law protects him in this instance. He's already won a case in Auburn, so to speak. So you can take him to court, but there is legal precedent already supporting his First Amendment right, and you can spend the money like they did there and still have to let him speak. So in that instance here, the university chose not to go down that route. Originally, when they denied him based off of the threat because it was so close to Charlottesville. After that, they decided to put him in the least, damaged area they could, a home football weekend that was a bye week, no football here, and later on a month removed.
All right, let's go now to Damon over in Riverside. Hey, Damon, good morning to you.
Morning, Melissa. I just wanted to say, you know, as an alumnus of University of Florida, and also just, you know, a concerned citizen, I appreciate you using the term white supremacist when you describe Richard Spencer. You know, he'd been kind of skirting the edges of that and calling himself all right or whatever, coming up with little names and dodges for what he is. But, you know, it's good when the media calls him out for what he is. It really helps kind of frame the discussion in a way that, you know, is truthful rather than, you know, letting him get by on, you know, semantics. And that's all I say, you know, other than I hope his speech goes very poorly tonight. Hmm. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Damon. Jenny in Murray Hill. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I am a University of Florida alumna, and I'm really disappointed that they had to have Richard Spencer come to campus. I'm not going today, and I just wanted to urge the people who are trying to ignore it and stay away to do something to fight back against white supremacy. I myself am donating to the Florida NAACP. We can't do nothing, even if we can't be there to protest.
Thanks for that. And Ryan Vasquez, isn't Alligator Brewery taking on some sort of creative way to push back against this speech by Spencer?
Absolutely. Now, that's if you can get tickets. The National Policy Institute is handling ticketing, and I'm sure that they, while they say that they're not going to discriminate, they're certainly looking for a certain type of audience in there. So there are about 700 tickets available, but if you can get yourself on hands on two tickets, the brewing company will trade your tickets for some free brews at their brewery. So that's one way to protest, I guess.
Lots of calls about Richard Spencer's speech at UF today. Whether you're a Gator alum or not, we want them. 549-2937. Tim is on the west side of Jacksonville. Hello, Tim.
Yeah, I totally agree with ignoring him, but this price for security, we shouldn't ignore. There should be some way to write into the laws of the college that when this is necessary, you have to foot the bill for security. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that. And a few comments on our social media on Facebook. Kelly writes, "We cannot think the best we can do is ignore him. A white nationalist vying for power is an open threat to American citizens. I wish UF took a stronger legal stance that advocating for a white ethno state is not protected speech, in the same vein that yelling fire in a crowded theater is not protected speech. If a group of people need to enact genocide to feel better about their identities, those people are a threat to society." And here's another email, though, from Mark. "Bravo to the president of UF. The First Amendment is alive and well on campus. My daughter is a junior there, and she will receive a valuable lesson in what hate looks like. I'm worried for her safety, but I believe the benefits outweigh the risks. To defeat the enemy, you must first understand them." And so, Ryan Vasquez, this is a fascinating discussion, isn't it? People see that all-important amendment through different prisms.
They do. And, you know, one of our professors here found something from a few years back, when the Chicago 7 came and spoke on campus, and a provocative attorney who defended them. And at the time, the board chairman, Bert Kibler, made a comment and says, "I think it would be a sign of infinite weakness to resort to repression as our defense against this scum." He said it would be rather chilling if our only method of combating this anarchist Marxist ideology was to repress it. And so I think the words still happen today. At that point, it was a left-leaning or a liberal slant. In this instance, it's an alt-right slant, and I think it still applies either way. And conversation-wise, if our only action in our country with a robust First Amendment that we all support as journalists is to suppress or try to stop this kind of conversation, then we've ran out of ideas to do a better good to try to prevent it.
Paul is in St. John's right now. Hi, Paul. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just had a question. Who exactly funds Richard Spencer? I mean, if it costs, you know, $12,000 to do one of these speeches, I mean, where is he getting this funding from?
Great question, Paul. And Ryan, I'm getting a lot of tweets asking the same. Who's funding Spencer and his ilk, others like him?
Well, as far as National Policy Institute is concerned, they're an organization that gets money from all kinds of alt-right supporters. They're folks who obviously have means. They get their money that way. They do so from speaking events. People actually request them, and they pay for those as well. So they get their money through a variety of avenues. They have their supporters, so that's how they do things. And they win court cases, and they take that money, and they use it as well. So they won a settlement from Auburn in addition to being allowed to speak. So in that instance, they have the ability to fund their own way. They're not just some random organization going out and doing things. Just like Westboro Baptist Church funds their process by donations and winning court cases.
And to be clear, the National Policy Institute is a white supremacist think tank based in Alexandria, Virginia, and it acts as a lobbying arm for white supremacists. Its president is Richard Spencer, the guy that's speaking on the UF campus later today. And their views, according to their website, say that the dispossession of white Americans will have catastrophic effects for the entire world. They produce reports on affirmative action, race, and conservatism. They have been classified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a white supremacist organization. The Anti-Defamation League Center on Extremism says the group was founded to be a white supremacist think tank. They are also regarded as part of a group of white nationalist organizations that try to, you know, sort of put an academic burnish on their views on white supremacy and the inferiority in their minds about other groups. All right, let's go to Adam in Ponte Vedra right now. Hello, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
I'm calling specifically because I find what the National Policy Institute and Richard Spencer stand for absolutely abhorrent. I find that, you know, what they have to say and their ideas just horrible and antithetical to what this country really should stand for. But at the same time, I support UF in letting them come and speak and not fighting a losing battle based on the First Amendment. However, what I'd like to see in the future from UF is, because as taxpayers, we are on the hook for you know, paying for all of the security, is some kind of bond, a standard bond that would let you know, any speaker come and then let the market decide how disruptive that this speech can be. It does take taxpayers off the hook.
Thanks, Adam. And we're getting so many tweets and messages. Here's one. My son lives in Gainesville. He and his friends bought a lot of tickets in order for those seats to remain empty. We'll have to see how it plays out. But Ryan Vasquez, your team at WUFT will be on the ground covering this, correct?
Correct. And we're doing our best here to cover all angles in Gainesville, not just the one outside. And hopefully we'll be on later today, and you'll be hearing reports from us as well on your station.
Thank you so much. He's Ryan Vasquez, multimedia news manager with WUFT in Gainesville. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead later. Today is actually Get Smart About Credit Day. Most of us aren't, sadly. But we'll have some tips on tightening up your credit score. And up next, JEA's major move on solar power. That's in a moment.
1 minute after 5 in the morning.
The president of the World Bank is calling.
1 minute after noon.
New York City authorities are investigating a second deadly crane collapse.
1 minute after 5 in the evening.
The commander of the Joint African Union has said.
1 minute after 11 at night.
At least one tornado is reported to have touched down today.
What's happening? What's known? What's next? 1 minute after the hour, every hour, every day. From NPR News.
Why doesn't education use innovation to grow like a successful business? Join WJCT for a screening and discussion about this question and others. Raised in School Inc., a personal journey with Andrew Coulson. This event will be held on Thursday, October 19th at WJCT Studios, beginning with an opening reception at 5:30 p.m. The event is free, but RSVPs are requested and can be made at wjct.org/events.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Welcome back. Well, JEA unveiled a sweeping new solar power program this week for the area. It's set to dramatically increase the utility's investment in solar panels and at the same time change how it provides incentives to residents who want to adopt rooftop solar. That's been a thorny issue utility executives have tried to navigate for some time now. Here to update us, we welcome right now a great panel, Steve McInall, JEA's Director of Electric Production Resource Planning. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having us.
Good to have you. Pete Wilking, principal at A1A Solar, is here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Sarah Boren with the U.S. Green Building Council.
Good morning, Melissa.
And David Schachter, CEO at TerraWise Homes. They specialize in building energy-efficient homes.
Good morning.
And what are your questions about expanding solar around town? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Steve McInall with JEA, let's begin with you. This proposal would replace JEA's existing policy that nuclear technology make up 30% of your power pie by 2030. The new goal focuses instead on 30% with zero carbon and carbon neutral projects. Could you explain a little bit about JEA's new policy and why you've laid out these benchmarks?
Well, the 30% by 2030 was something the board had done back in 2010. And with the different price trajectories that we've seen with nuclear projects getting more and more expensive, and solar just prices coming down much faster than anybody had envisioned, certainly back in 2010, we felt it was appropriate to not necessarily even change, but to broaden, because nuclear still qualifies under that 30% by 2030, but this gives us more options and helps us select the most cost-effective option to achieve a carbon-neutral or carbon-free future, and that'll help lower bills for all of our customers.
Right, and the big piece that JEA is looking at is 5 new solar farms in Jacksonville. That's a big leap forward for solar.
It is, and we're very excited about having some large solar facilities. 50 megawatts gets us a large economy of scale. Having all the facilities in our territory helps cut down on any transmission costs. And again, it's just a lower cost option. We expect that power to come in at about our fuel rate, making it really essentially the same price as what we pay for generation from fossil fuels. And that just gives us almost a financial hedge against future increases in fossil fuel prices, because we've got a large quantity of our power needs locked in for the future.
Pete Wilking, A1A Solar. In the past, you've tussled with the utility about the difficulty for people to access solar, but you like this new policy, correct?
Well, as an industry professional, net metering has been a big driver and one thing that we've been really passionate about keeping, because it helps the economics for early adopters and all that. So last time we've had go-arounds on this, we've been really looking to protect net metering.
Explain, if you could, really quickly what that is.
Okay, net metering is basically any excess energy that goes back to the grid is being credited at full retail rate value.
And if you have solar on your roof, you can do that.
Yes, if you have solar on your roof, but there's some conditions, usually not a small percentage, maybe up to 20 or 30% may go back to the grid. The rest is all consumed in the house.
Okay. So, but in the main, you see this as a step forward.
Well, there's many components to this new policy, which I'm supportive of. It removes caps on solar. It basically is a better long-term solution for rooftop solar, which is very different than utility-scale solar. So the fact that they're encouraging battery technology, which is really one of the future aspects that's really going to add to renewables and how the grid is going to be essentially functioning.
And Sarah Boren with the U.S. Green Building Council, David Schachter of TerraWise Homes. This will encourage, I would think, more energy efficient and green homes around this community, more solar panels on more rooftops.
I hope so. I am the kind of the data I'm going to look at is the adoption rate. So JEA should be commended for all these policies they've introduced. There's almost a product for every sector in our area to enter into solar somehow. So I'm just hoping that the market is ready for a decline in net metering and the battery storage incentive program.
David Schachter.
Well, we're a little different builder. Most of our customers want solar as part of their home, and so I think for our customers, it's more understanding how this program, this new program, will change how they use their solar and how they get their investment back. And so I don't think it's bad that the program is changing. I think it's more of a learning curve. Nobody really likes change, because they don't understand it. And I think it's more of a learning curve for us and to educate our customers. And the market will shift, we'll adjust, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, all right. Now it's about education.
All right, let's educate more people and take some calls on this at 549-2937. Todd on the South Side. Hey, Todd.
Oh, hey, thank you. I'm really excited about what JEA is doing. And if you have a roof that takes solar, it's really worth doing. We get about $100 off of our electric bill every month. It's paid for itself long ago, and it's a good deal. But my concern is that what Jay is doing is only a small part of what we need to do as a community. Sure, electricity is starting to get there, but there's also the agriculture sector, transportation, and efficiency. And I wish we had a comprehensive plan and maybe a commission to really roll up our sleeves and do the right thing over the next 20 years.
A more comprehensive plan around this. What about that idea?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Certainly as the utility, we're all about efficiency. Green Building Council, we think, is a great partner on that. And certainly TerraWise Homes as well, with the first developing an energy efficient home. So we're minimizing usage. And we've seen really a decrease in our per customer consumption of almost 15% over the past 10 years. So that's the adoption of energy-efficient appliances, more energy-efficient home building practices, just even the increases in the building code. So there's a lot of ways to approach that.
Pete Welking, A1A Solar.
With solar adoption, essentially, it's growing. Homes are getting more efficient. I see a big growth in electric vehicles, and that takes a lot of energy. So, by and large, it's a growth industry, but it's leveling out a bit in terms of adoption. Battery technology has really increased just over the last 2 years with lithium ion. There's a bunch of different manufacturers. And the way that we produce the energy and the way it goes back and forth to the grid is going to be changing over time.
CJ is in San Marco. Hey, CJ, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. This question is for the gentleman from JEA. Have you looked at more of a full buy-in in solar and really more of a decentralized notion of solar as far as, a partnership with homeowners, especially homeowners that can't necessarily afford the upfront costs of something like a a lease or a lease to own solar systems for people, where essentially you have would have a energy plant on every home, and you would also provide for redundancy and backups for people, like say in the event of a storm, that neighborhoods can be more self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. Looking at really the future of kind of where the technology is going and what the opportunities are.
So sure, yeah. Thanks for that. It can be a barrier up front to invest in it.
Yeah, when it comes to getting solar on a home or a business, there is capital cost involved. There's no doubt about it. Most of our customers typically do some sort of loan product on that, where the reduction in your energy cost is largely covers the payment on that. So typically you've got a 25 to 30 year power plant, and you only need financing maybe 10 to 12 years to give you even cash flow. So if you own a home, you have reasonable credit, it's not very difficult at all to get solar on your home without writing a large check.
And David Schachter, people that come to TerraWise Homes, they don't just want solar, as you said. They're interested in an energy-efficient home from top to bottom.
Yeah,
they're willing to pay for that.
That's true, and yeah. It does cost more to build a house that's more energy-efficient. The way we approach it is a systematic approach, so it's many things that go into the home to make it more efficient. And that by doing that, we only need about half as many solar panels as a typical house to get to zero.
Michael on the south side. Hi, Michael. Oh, Michael, turn your radar down. Give us a call back. Here's a tweet for all of you from Matthew. Would anyone be in favor of making solar mandatory for new builds? Sarah Boren.
Well, with USGBC, we're a big proponent of on-site generation and obviously making buildings high-performing through energy efficiency and on the water and the material side as well. So, but I don't think we're a fan of anything that's mandatory. We love the market to work for it, and there's always this kind of knee-jerk reaction to anything mandated. And then, is it an unfunded mandate? All that kind of stuff. So, I would love to see as much solar adopted and creating the table, setting the table so that it's the right choice and the market flows that way. And I think the economics are already flowing. And then just to the past caller, I think they were asking about JEA's program on Solar Smart. There is a program that JEA's and Steve can talk obviously more about it, but where if you have an apartment or you have a home that you can't put a solar system on because you've got a tree, you can buy a certain amount of green energy through the JEA Solar Smart program.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Yeah, and to answer CJ's question too, we are looking at additional programs to be able to incorporate solar systems into the grid and expand it. And really, the battery program is a step in that direction. Right now, solar panels don't work without grid backup, and if people have their own battery backup, there's going to be more of a likelihood that they'll be able to do that. So it is a step towards that power generation throughout our grid. But we do have a legacy grid of centralized generation, and it's not something we can just turn on a dime. So in the future, certainly, I think decentralized generation is more likely and maybe more attractive. But we're working that way. As far as Solar Smart, we think that's a great offering. It's a chance for people who can't put solar, whether they live in a shaded neighborhood that just doesn't have a good rooftop solar exposure, or apartment buildings where they don't own the rights to the rooftop. They can participate and buy solar energy at our cost through their JEA bill. And part of our program offerings that we rolled out on Tuesday was a new solar max rate for large commercial customers. And that's a customer that would use almost a megawatt all the time. It's 7 million kilowatt hours a year. So really large distribution facilities, data centers, and they'll actually be able to contract with us for one of the new solar farms and have 5 to 10 years locked in at a known rate. So we think that'll be really attractive for drawing new green businesses here. And as everybody knows, a lot of the corporations now have very strong green mandates, and that mm-hmm. is a lot of what's driving the whole movement.
Sure. Well, thanks all four of you for this update. As everybody who listens to this show knows, we like to follow these issues on the program all the time. So we appreciate your insights. Steve McInall with JEA, Pete Welking, A1A Solar, Sarah Boren with the U.S. Green Building Council, and David Schachter. He's CEO of TerraWise Homes. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrest live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Watch the Kret Brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311. Or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Hey, Car Talk fans. If you're wondering why Click and Clack aren't here, NPR is no longer distributing the best of Car Talk. The good news is you can continue to listen to the podcasts of the program at cartalk.com. We hope you enjoy WJCT's new weekend schedule. For more information about the new programs, visit wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Well, across the nation, hundreds of students with autism spectrum disorders are applying and enrolling in colleges and universities, including at the University of North Florida. There's a group on campus to help make sure these students succeed. It's called Thrive, or Transition to Health, Resources, Independence, Viable Careers, and Education. Robert Rittenhouse is a student leader who works with Thrive at UNF in their third annual CLO, or Community Learning Opportunities, coming up this weekend. We've got a preview right now. Robert, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa, for having me.
And this is great because this helps students on the campus educate professionals about how they can better understand you, the students, and help you thrive. What a great idea.
Yeah, we definitely are very excited about how much Thrive has grown between 2012 and then this year. Just over 5 years, we've gone from five students to well over 100.
And so there's more than 100 students on the UNF campus who have ASD, autism spectrum disorders, that are taking advantage of this.
As far as those who have identified themselves, yes. But there are other students on campus who may not have found Thrive yet, who may also have it, but we can't confirm it. But yeah, as far as we know, there's over 100.
So this is going to begin then with students like you just sharing your experiences, right? And then the adults will kind of listen and then try to help respond.
Yes, it will be student leaders within the Thrive program speaking first, sharing what their experiences as degree-seeking students on the autism spectrum, what it's like for them. And then afterwards, we'll have smaller breakout sessions and roundtable discussions where community leaders and students alike will be able to dialogue about various topics that the student leaders have picked out, such as what it's like to be at a Thrive wind down, or you know, about professional networking, resume building, and different skills. And then we'll have some special guest speakers who are going to share their thoughts as well, because they're very excited about being advocates for the Thrive program and also degree seeking students on the autism spectrum as well. And afterwards, we'll have some closing remarks, but we have a really exciting day ahead, for sure.
This is coming up Saturday from noon to 4 on the UNF campus.
Correct.
And you know, I love hearing about this, and at the same time, it makes me a little sad, only because my brother is on the autism spectrum. And as I sit here and look across the table at you, you remind me so much of my brother when he was in college. And when he was in college at Bowling Green State University, he was all alone, and there was really nothing at all like this to help him. And he really struggled and suffered, and it was tough. And so I'm just so glad that there has been so much progress in terms of helping kids on the spectrum. And I just think this is fantastic. So how can people then be part of the Thrive event on Saturday?
Well, if there's still some space available, if you want to attend the event, feel free to reach out to us at thrivevpeducation@gmail.com. And you can ask for more information, or if you'd like to confirm your attendance, you can do that as well. And if you have any questions or concerns, we'd be happy to answer those for you.
Now, what year are you?
I am a senior about to graduate this semester.
What's your major?
Advertising.
Advertising?
Yep.
What do you hope to do?
I hope to get into research or copywriting, but there are other things that I'd like to do as well outside of that, like advocate for ASD and work on my creative writing and other things like that. I have a lot that I want to accomplish after graduation.
And I know you will. I know you will. And so when you first came to the campus, what was the biggest thing that you had to overcome as someone on the autism spectrum? Real quick.
I think for me, really learning how to connect with others and also to understand myself, my strengths and weaknesses. When I first got to UNF in fall 2014, I didn't really know what it when I looked around, it seemed like everybody had known each other for years. And then for me, I felt like there wasn't an opening for me to get to know people. And so my first semester was a tough time, you know, trying to adjust to what it's like to be in college. And then starting in the spring, I was going to the Thrive wind downs and meeting with a mentor once a week. And that really helped me to develop my social skills better and also to empower me to get involved in other organizations besides Thrive, like the Ad Club on campus, the Awakening on campus and Awaken Church outside of campus, and also, you know, start doing creative writing and submitting to the Talent Review and all the sort of exciting things that come with, you know, being an Osprey, you know, that really help it to make it so that, you know, there's no one like you in no place like this.
It's the Thrive event for students on the autism spectrum this Saturday on the UNF campus. Robert, I know you will thrive, so thanks for sharing this.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.
Eric Garner's death is a familiar story. An unarmed black man is killed by police. No one is charged. Journalist Matt Taibbi wanted to understand why.
Not just how these incidents happen in a few terrible seconds, but how they happen over the course of years and decades and repeat over and over and over again.
His book, I Can't Breathe, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. In Mexico City, 1 month after the earthquake, many people still don't know if their apartment buildings are safe.
The city has abandoned its role.
The World's Monica Campbell lives in Mexico City, and she's looking for answers.
Do you think that people will go live in these buildings that you think should actually be demolished?
Definitely. That's going to happen.
When your city collapses, that's next time on The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
How can one man prompt a literal state of emergency? Richard Spencer, a white nationalist, plans to speak at the University of Florida. Some college students are furiously demanding to hear any speaker they want. Others are equally furious about shouting down hateful voices. Upholding the First Amendment and keeping students safe, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Vietnam, a war with a rock and roll soundtrack. But there's so much more to it than most of us realize. Tune in to Time to Lay It Down, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War, and listen to the music that expressed the deep divisions about the war, but was also a lifeline for GIs in Vietnam and a source of healing when they came home.
Sunday night at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour today is Get Smart About Credit Day. Truth be told, most of us need to be smarter about our credit, don't you? You know who I'm talking to. You. We are a nation in debt. That includes me and everybody I know. Now, today is also International Credit Union Day, so it's appropriate that we welcome with her thoughts and good advice Mary Svoboda. She's Chief Lending Officer and Chief Operating Officer for Jack's Federal Credit Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I didn't realize that there was a Credit Union Day, first of all, and it's today.
Yes, yeah. International Credit Union Day. I think we've had it since the 90s.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So you're celebrating credit unions. You know, they're nonprofits. They're a more frugal way to manage your money. But today is also Get Smart About Credit Day, which America needs so badly.
Absolutely.
Why are we so bad at managing our credit? We suck at this. We're just terrible at it.
You know, it's interesting because with technology, we have so many ways now to be so much more informed.
Yes, right? You'd think we'd be great.
And to monitor, you'd think that we would be great. We just simply need to start to focus on it and realize that your credit history and your credit score really impact the quality of your life.
So that's tip one you have today. Know your credit score.
Absolutely.
That is so important.
Yeah, know your score and actually review your credit report. You can go to annualcreditreport.com. That's an actual government-sponsored site. Get your credit report 3 times a year if you order 1 time from Experian, 1 time from Equifax, and 1 time from TransUnion. So you could get 3 credit reports a year at no cost to you.
And it won't affect your overall score.
That's right. It will not impact you.
That's why I've sometimes hesitated at pulling my credit because it dings my score.
Right. No, that won't happen if you do it at annualcreditreport.com.
Annualcreditreport.com.
Yep.
By the way, why are there 3 credit reporting agencies?
You know, that's a question that I don't know. I don't know the answer to.
Why do we need 3 of them?
In the old days, I think it was more regional. So Experian used to be known as TRW out in the California West Coast area. TransUnion primarily served the Middle America, and here in the South, Equifax. But, you know, I think things could change. We've seen, you know, consolidation of so many industries. I wouldn't be surprised.
And maybe one of them will be Equifax, speaking of which, their massive data breach hasn't exactly inspired confidence in how they're scoring our credit report.
It's terribly troubling, isn't it, to think that a credit reporting agency would have a breach like that. And the message for your consumers is they've got to get out to Equifax.com, put in, I think it requires maybe the last 6 digits of your Social Security number and your name, and you put that in, and they can tell you whether or not your personal information was involved in this compromise. And then they'll have mitigating steps that you can take at no cost to you.
And I did that. One piece of advice I got was that you can put a freeze,
yes,
on your credit.
Right.
That is the best way to protect your data right now, and that you really cannot trust Equifax to protect you. Do you agree with that advice?
I do agree. If you're really concerned, I think a credit freeze is the best answer for you. There is a level of inconvenience to you if you are a person who is still actively using credit. If you'd be the kind of person that would go to Best Buy or Lowe's and want to apply for 6 months same as cash, you're going to be stopped there. So, but if you're at a point in your life where you're not regularly applying for that type of credit, you're in a good place, then I think it would give you some peace of mind, definitely.
Okay, so know your score, look through your credit report, find any problems and start cleaning them up, anything inaccurate, anything that is bringing your score down. Then the key thing here is start improving your score.
Absolutely.
People don't know how to do that. So what are the small little actionable steps people can take to bring up their credit score? And I've always heard that you want it above 700. Is that the golden number to be above?
I think you'd absolutely want to shoot to be above 700. If you want the best rates, your score is going to need to be over 740.
Okay, but at least above 700.
But at least 700, you'd know that you weren't going to be denied.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
You might pay a little bit more than what we would call an A-plus borrower, but at least you would be approved. The couple of actionable steps, which are good suggestions that you have there, is to think about if you have collection items, things that you haven't paid, telephone bills, you know, gas bills, magazines, cell phone bills, and get with those creditors and see if you can negotiate with them. Sometimes you might be able to settle for a fraction of what you owe and get those showing up on your credit report as paid debts. And then move forward, pay every bill on time. use those reminders in your phone, you know, all those technology tips and things that are available to you now to just make sure you pay your bills on time. If you consistently pay your bills on time for 24 months, your score will definitely improve.
Great advice. But here's a one tweet from a listener. Our country's credit is so insecure because people have been underpaid since the 1980s. And there's data to support that, that most households are carrying credit card debt because real wages haven't gone up. So we keep putting more and more on plastic. Do you agree with that?
I do to some extent. There's certainly statistics that would support that statement. But we also live in a society where we all think we have to have luxury items. You know, I often joke that if there's going to be granite countertops in every apartment, what are the rich people going to have in their homes, right? And so,
solid gold,
right? Right. So, I mean, we could. I think that truthfully, we could live with less. We could manage with less. We could put less pressure on each other to go out to eat or to have expensive purses or shoes or whatever those things are.
Yeah, my my grandparents lived through the Depression, and you know, to the end of their lives, they lived in this little house with this tiny, dingy little kitchen. And then after they died, all of a sudden it was revealed to me and my brother that they had all this money.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
At the funeral, they read the will, and my brother and I looked at each other and we were like, Grandma and Grandpa don't have any money. Have you seen their house?
Right.
Well, guess what? They had money. They just didn't spend any of
it. I personally would like a balance. I'd like to have some money in my 401k, but I don't want to live meagerly all the way to the end.
That's right. Yeah. I guess living through the Depression does things to your psyche, so we can try to find a happy medium, can't we?
Absolutely. I think that's what financial wellness is finding that happy medium.
Great advice. And it is Get Smart About Credit Day. So take that advice. Know your score. Improve your score. Mary Svoboda, Chief Lending Officer and Chief Operating Officer for the Jack's Federal Credit Union. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And if you missed part of today's show, you can listen to the rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Next on 1A, a look at the appearance by Richard Spencer at the University of Florida. Is free speech in a state of emergency? I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.